Welcome to Quadriga. A recent string of violent right-wing protests in the eastern German city of Chemnitz, some involving intimidation of foreigners, Hitler salutes, and mob violence, has prompted consternation worldwide and soul-searching here at home. But this week, it was other images that made headlines, as 65,000 people assembled in Chemnitz for a concert dedicated to taking a stand against xenophobia and violence. Initiated by a local band and including prominent groups, the concert's motto was, "We are more." It began with a moment of silence for the victim of the attack that prompted the initial protests, a young man who was stabbed, allegedly, by migrants now in detention. The far right. Can Germany defeat its demons? That's our topic this week on Quadriga. And here are our guests. It's a pleasure to welcome Matthew Karnicig back to the program. He's chief Europe correspondent for Politico, and he says Germany's demons are necessary and will never be overcome. The question is whether Germany's political elite is drawing the right lessons from history. The events of the past week suggest they're not. And it's a pleasure to have Valerie Höhne with us. She's political correspondent in the Berlin Bureau of Spiegel Online, and she's been reporting on Chemnitz. The AfD community is gradually merging with right-wing extremist groups in Germany, she says. If the moderates in the party fail to take a stand against this development, they will inevitably be dominated by radicals. And finally, I'm very glad to greet our colleague from Deutsche Welle, Linda Vierecke, who also has been reporting from Chemnitz. She says the events in Chemnitz have the potential to further divide German society. So we have seen two startlingly different faces of Chemnitz over the past 10 days. We've heard dramatically opposing views about what actually happened there on Sunday, August 26th. So you, Linda, have been reporting from Chemnitz, and I'd like to ask you to get us started by giving us your sense of who is behind the violence and where Chemnitz really comes down. Which is the face of Chemnitz?
That's a difficult question. Something that the people there ask themselves, I think. I've talked to people from both sides, as we can say, of initiatives and people that are very engaged in fighting right-wing extremism for many, many years. And they said that they never got the support they wanted to, actually. That's what they're saying for a long time. But on the other side, people from Pegida, or not even from Pegida, from
Pegida,
the far...
Pegida being the anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant movement that had its birth in Dresden, which is not too far away from Chemnitz.
Exactly. And people that are, you know, go to the demonstration, they're maybe not part of Pegida, but they understand, you know, they have their fears. And they actually fear the violence of the migrants. So we really have two different fears here in the same city. That was my sense. And, of course, I've been there for the concert, and it was a very nice atmosphere. But, of course, the question is, it was nice for the one side, and the other side, will it include, you know, can it be included? Will the society be divided by that or not?
And we want to pick up on that question. Matthew, just coming back to the concert, it was certainly aimed at showing a different face of Chemnitz than the one that we'd seen during the protests and the mob violence. It did draw 65,000 people. Your opening statement said the political elite doesn't seem to be learning the right lessons from history. What about the people themselves? What about those concert goers?
Well, I think that's an open question, and I would say that we don't really know yet. If you put on a free concert with some of the most popular bands in Germany, it's inevitable that you're going to have thousands of people come. Whether most of those people were there for political reasons, I don't know. It's interesting that a few days before the concert, there was a demonstration also in Chemnitz, and depending on which numbers you believe, they range from about 8,000 to 11,000, roughly evenly divided between sort of, you know, more right-wing-oriented groups and even neo-Nazi groups and people who were arguing the other side. That's not a lot, really, right? After everything that had happened in the previous 10 days, you know, roughly 10,000 people show up, 5,000 to protest these Nazi attacks. Doesn't really suggest to me that there's a sort of wave of anti-Nazi sentiment in the country at the moment, to the point that people are going to go out onto the street. That's why I thought it was fascinating that when they had the concert, which I think was on a Monday, you had 65,000 people there, as you said. And yet for this other protest, which was really much more political, which was on a Sunday, you only had a smattering of people show up.
Valerie, there have been all these calls since the riots in Chemnitz for people to take a stand, to stand up. Is it naive to think that a concert can make a difference?
I think that for the people who live there, who are on the left-wing spectrum, it's actually important to see that they have support within the German society. However, of course, this is one concert one day, as Matthew was saying, and it's probably not going to make a huge difference in the political legislation that we're going to see come forward now from the Saxonian government. I don't think that that would change much. But I do think that for the people living there who are on the left, it was very important. However, also for the people on the right, they obviously, they're going to be angry about this, and they're going to probably want to respond in some way as well.
And in fact, we have voices from Chemnitz that show us some of those divisions. Let's hear the voices both of some of those who attended and those who organized the event.
It's cool that so many young people have come to show their support for Chemnitz.
Most people here are quite normal. They believe in democracy, and they're not right-wingers. We wouldn't want them here.
The concert should have been neutral, not against the right, but simply for peace. This way it was too provocative.
This is not the left battling the right. And this is crucial. Anybody with a sense of decency, whatever his or her political position, has to stand up to a mob of violent right-wing extremists. It's very important that we halt this kind of thing while it's still a snowball and before it turns into an avalanche.
Linda, your opening statement referred to the rising divisions in German society. We heard a voice, one person in that piece, saying that a concert like this deepens the divisions because it's against a group within society. Would you say there's something to that argument?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I agree with Campino. I think it shouldn't be about left or right. I think everybody in Germany should actually be against right-wing extremism. I mean, we have right and left. There's no problem to it. But if it comes to extremism, we just, you know, should raise our voice. And with the history we have, this should be an important task for whole society. But the concert was problematic in a way that they were seen as the left wing. And many people who came there, I talked to an old couple, for example, born still during World War II. They came there saying, you know, this is not our music, but we are against right-wing extremism. But on the same page, we are against refugee violence here happening in our town, and we are worried. So, and this was very... and not of a very typical situation, because usually these people don't go to the demonstration. It's an either or, and that's what I was experiencing. You're either for or against it. So, you know, and this is where politics has to come in.
Matthew, these two faces of Chemnitz, these two very different kinds of interpretations, they look a lot like the polarization that we're seeing in a lot of other places in the West. Germany has long prided itself on a kind of consensus tradition in its politics. In fact, the governing coalition is composed of two rival mainstream parties. Would you say that's breaking down and we're seeing the same kind of divisions opening up here as we have, let's say, in the U.S.?
Absolutely. I think that Chemnitz really is kind of a crucible of that. I think it's less about the town of Chemnitz, which is really a small city, and it's more about what people project on to what happened there. And, you know, if you go back and look at the way that this whole thing unfolded, you know, it started out as a murder by a couple of refugees, apparently, of a German citizen, and that's what triggered all of this violence. And I think the problem in this debate is that the media and the society here, they've kind of, like, lost the forest for the trees a bit, because I think that most Germans, if you speak to them, say, well, what do you think about what happened? They want to talk about what Linda just mentioned, which is the refugee violence. okay, which is, in many people's perception, a big problem. And you can look at the statistics and determine that yourself, whether it's a problem or not. Germany is still a very safe country overall. There has been an uptick in violent crime and murder and so forth where refugees have been involved in recent years. But it is something, because there have been some prominent cases that people are worried about. There have been the murder of a couple of girls. There was a 14-year-old girl in June who was murdered in Wiesbaden. There was a 15-year-old girl in a small town in southwestern Germany last December who was murdered, and her killer was from Afghanistan and was just sentenced this week, in fact. But it is something that people are worried about, and I think that there's a sense that the politicians don't want to talk about this. They would rather talk about neo-Nazis, and neo-Nazis is a serious problem.
They talk about these cases a lot. We're hearing about these cases a lot.
They haven't been talking about it this week in the context of Chemnitz, because that issue of what happened to the carpenter who was killed there was quickly overtaken by this talk of a hunt for people of color in the town by neo-Nazis, which now appears not to have been the case, depending on whom you ask, and this question of this threat from the right, and whether or not the German Domestic Intelligence Service should put the AfD party under surveillance as a result. And this is what everybody is talking about.
I'm going to quickly say that we will come back to some of those issues in just a moment, because we have a short report that I want to bring in a few minutes on the political scene. But if I may, let me just pick up on one thing that Matthew said, and it relates also to the question of how much are we talking about crime in the streets? How much are we talking about far-right protests? And who's doing the talking where? And for you, Valerie, as a member of the online media, can you just take us through the role that online media are playing in this deepening polarization and in what appears to be a certain discrepancy in terms of reporting on crime perpetrated by migrants? Because clearly, many people who are going to the streets are people who feel that their streets are unsafe. Where is that coming from?
I feel like that's one of the issues that really was underestimated by many people, especially in Berlin, especially in the government, where the internet has such a high potential for just getting these people together out on the streets and protesting in such a short amount of time. However, if you're talking about online media, you have to sort of distinguish between popular online media or, you know, publishing houses. Like, I'm from Spiegel Online, which is a publishing house. It's Der Spiegel. It's a mainstream media outlet. Or Facebook groups, Twitter groups, where especially right-wing extremists just can mobilize so many people so fast, which we saw actually on Sunday after the murder initially happened, that they were able to mobilize 800 to 1,000 people in a matter of hours. And that's something that I think was very much underestimated by the government of Saxonia, by probably the German government as well, and by the police. And that was, I think that was an issue. And just to because you said that we're, the politicians aren't talking about the issues of violence that is coming from migrants, I feel like there's such a focus on it, though, too, where a lot of media is focusing on these specific crimes, where they're not focusing on crimes that are committed by Germans.
Well, I think that they're focusing on these high-profile crimes. I don't know right. that they're focusing on the larger issue and what the political consequences of that could mm-hmm. be and what it could mean. And I think, just again, this neo-Nazi thing is quite interesting, because is it really that surprising that in Germany, given especially in East Germany, where you had this neo-Nazi basically hit squad roaming through the country for 10 years, right. killing people, that you have this
You're
kind of violence?
To the NSU, a group based in East Germany that murdered with impunity
exactly.
people of migrant
and,
background.
And as you said, they were able to put together online, you know, they would get 600 or 800 people together to come to Chemnitz, neo-Nazis. Well, that's obviously horrible, but is that really that surprising in a country of 80 million that you can, you know, that these networks exist and that they can mobilize very,
you know,
very,
the
very
quickly? You know, what's surprising is that, you know, that there is not a strong stand-up against it. And Saxony has had a problem with right-wing extremism for a long time. And actually, there wasn't a strong voice against it from the ruling party, from the CDU. This, for me, is surprising, actually, because this is, you know, we're talking about democratic values here.
I think there's been a strong voice against Nazis. I mean, this is something, this is the comfort zone of German mainstream politics, is to be against Nazis. Everybody is against Nazis. It's like being against poverty or global warming. And this is why everybody comes out now and says, oh, we have to do something about it. Our democracy is at
risk. Isn't one of the challenges of standing up the apparently diffuse nature of this right-wing sentiment that is being expressed? Because, in fact, as we saw also among those sound bites, many of the people who are joining these protests in Chemnitz would say, I'm not a member of the far right. I am not a member of the AfD party. But I'm out here to tell people that I don't feel I'm safe on the street.
Right, but if you're marching alongside...
So are they complicit in violence? Are they complicit in xenophobia?
I would say they know what they're doing, and they know they are marching next to neo-Nazis. And this is not only the AfD. Many members of the AfD are not neo-Nazis, they're Democrats. But the AfD just has, they're just merging with right-wing extremist groups. And they were marching with people who definitely are right-wing extremists and are neo-Nazis. And I do feel like the politicians that were marching are complicit in the xenophobia that results. Now, the people, I feel like it's hard to judge them, but on the other hand, they're marching next to people who have insignias, who have tattoos that are very clear in their message. So I'm.
But isn't that a reflection of the fact that they don't think that their concerns are being taken seriously by the political class?
Definitely.
And particularly on this issue of refugee violence.
So let me bring in the report that shows us exactly that march and does point to that blurring of the lines between far-right neo-Nazi groups and a party, the AfD, that is represented in the federal parliament.
Far-right groups marched through Chemnitz holding up portraits of people they say were victims of crimes committed by migrants. In the vanguard, politicians from the right-wing populist AfD party such as Björn Höcke, well known for his inflammatory anti-foreigner tirades. The AfD national leadership does not rein him in. Lutz Bachmann was also there. He's one of the founders of the far-right anti-Muslim Pegida movement. He's been convicted of inciting racial hatred. Neo-Nazis and other right-wing extremists were out in force, many already known to the police, and ordinary townspeople. This is the first time right-wing populists and extremists have marched together so blatantly. The police broke up the march, but its message had already come through loud and clear. How dangerous is such an emergent right-wing nationalist alliance?
Linda, let me pass that question right on to you. How firm and how dangerous is this alliance between a party sitting in the federal parliament, the AfD, this right-wing party, came to power partly on anti-immigrant positions, and actual neo-Nazis?
Well, it's a sign. Yeah, it's a symbol also. I mean, we've been hearing things said in the Bundestag, in the parliament, that are racist, so you know the party is setting a tone that people on the street pick up. They think it's okay to say that, and there I see a problem. You know, I mean, it's okay to criticize, and there's a reason to criticize also on migration politics here in Germany, but you know, in a democratic circle, let's put it like that.
Valerie, you talked in your opening statement about the blurring of the lines. Would you say that this means we are seeing mob violence actually orchestrated by the far right, by neo-Nazis? And would you say that this ideology is taking on mass appeal in large swathes of Eastern Germany, or does that go too far?
Well, I think those are like two very different questions. I don't think that they're orchestrated by the AfD. I think they're more spontaneous eruptions. Definitely the protests are organized, but what we've seen that, you know, people who aren't white are being chased through the streets, the videos that we saw of that, I don't think that that's just an eruption of violence, I would say. And I think that the AfD plays a role in that. As you said, Linda, they're making it more possible for people to say these things without actually having to fear anything from society. They can just, they go back to work. They're not sanctioned for it, whereas before they were. And I think that's a big part of what the AFD is making possible for the neo-right.
Matthew, some people would say mainstream politicians are also lowering the threshold to xenophobic talk. And the person I mean in particular would be the head of the Chancellor's sister party, the Bavarian Conservative Party. He said just this week, apparently, in an internal party meeting, that he thinks the main problem in Germany today is migration. Horst Seehofer, has he in fact helped to normalize the kind of xenophobia we're now seeing on the streets?
Well, I think we'd have to know exactly what he meant by that. I think he might have meant that this migration crisis, which and the handling of the crisis and the political fallout from it is the mother of all crises politically in Germany now, because it has opened the door in many people's view to this surge by the AFD, which, you know, as you know, wasn't even on the map really in 2015 before this happened. They weren't in the Bundestag at the time. And they went from basically low single-digit percentage points in the polls to all of a sudden 15%. And they did very well in the last election. So I think this is, to be fair to say, Hofer, that's probably what he was referring to. And he's on the front lines of this because he's the interior minister as well and is in charge of the police and is dealing with this every day.
But hasn't he also exacerbated the anti-migrant sentiment, for example, by suggesting Germany ought to be shutting down its border? Big debate that he had with the chancellor in June.
Look, I think he's running scared because his base down in Bavaria, they're very concerned about this. And there is this kind of schizophrenia about it. Because on the other hand, as he would be the first to point out, Bavaria has done more for refugees than any other state. They've taken in more. They've been very generous in their contributions to dealing with the crisis. So you have that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, you have the rhetoric. And I think that they have the AFD behind them, and they're trying to find a solution. And I think making a lot of bad decisions, because instead of really, you know, trying to find an honest way of dealing with the crisis, and instead of saying, well, we're going to turn people back at the border, to say, well, this is how we're going to integrate people better, this is what we're doing here, here, and here, there's this kind of sense still in Germany, and Merkel even said this during the campaign as well, that, well, a lot of these people are going to go back. You know, and I think this is part of the problem, you know, again, to these marchers who were standing there next to the neo-Nazis and stuff, who look like completely normal people. There's a sense that, well, this entire thing is a sham, that we've been lied to. If you look at the numbers of people, for example, just as one interesting data point, yeah, the number of people who come into Germany whose asylum application was denied, who end up staying, okay, that pool of people is in the hundreds of thousands. So I think a lot of normal citizens...
Legislation.
Well, this is why you need legislation to deal with that. But it hasn't been done, and I think this is the frustration that a lot of normal Germans feel.
Linda, just taking us back to the immediate reaction to what's going on in Chemnitz and the question posed by our title, can Germany defeat its demons? In the whole federal cabinet, only one minister has actually been to Chemnitz in the aftermath of these riots there, and that's the family minister, who herself has a background from Eastern Germany. What's going on? Where are the rest of the government politicians, and should they be standing up in a different way?
Well, I've been there, actually interviewed her when she was in Chemnitz, and I think she did a really good job, you know, bringing in the civil society, talking to them. And I've talked to them, and they always said, you know, for years, nobody has talked to us, yeah? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's important for politicians also to look at these remote areas. Chemnitz, this is a town in a very typical Eastern German town, you know, big streets, socialistic architecture, really like a place where you come to and say, okay, yeah, this is interesting here, but... you know, I don't feel very good here coming at the first sight, yeah? So, you know, she did a very good job giving the feeling that we're looking, we're here. But, of course, I mean, it's a question, the Interior Minister, why wasn't he there? Why isn't the Chancellor going there?
I think she is going.
But the Chancellor...
Right? She's not. She hasn't yet.
But the Chancellor, that puts so much pressure on this whole protest and everything that is related to it. I'm not sure that she should... I'm really not sure if she should go there. Because if she went, that would make it a national crisis. And I think that what has to happen is that Saxony has to deal with this issue.
The state in which Chemnitz and also Dresden, the birthplace of the Pegida movement, are both located.
And the governor is in a really hard position because he's new, he's young, he has to win an election next year, and he has the AfD, who is definitely chasing him in the polls, and he's very conservative, but on the other hand, he has to stand up against these right-wing extremists, and I think that's what we're not seeing. That's what I would say.
Yeah, we're not seeing that at all.
Matthew, last word.
A problem.
Don't have a lot of time.
Okay, I think...
Defeating the demons of xenophobia, populism, nationalism, extremely tough challenge facing politicians all over the West. What do they need to do here in Germany now?
Well, I think they need to admit the mistakes that they've made and say, you know, a lot of what's happened over the past 3 years didn't go well, and we're now trying to fix the situation instead of denying that and trying to change the subject all the time. And that's why I think Merkel should go to Chemnitz. I think she needs to go there to really, you know, take this issue head on and deal with people's concerns.
Thank you very much to all of you for being with us, and thanks to you out there for tuning in. See you soon.